President, when it comes to the conference report on the USA Patriot Act, the die has now been cast. The Senate has voted to reconsider the vote against cloture from last December, and now has voted to limit debate on the Patriot Act reauthorization bill. The rules of the Senate have changed since the days of Jimmy Stewart and Mr. Smith goes to Washington. One senator, no matter how strongly he or she feels, cannot single-handedly stop a bill when 60 or more of his or her colleagues are dead set on passing it. So obviously at this point, final passage of the reauthorization bill is now assured. I am disappointed in this result, obviously, but I believe this fight has been worth making, and my dedication to changing the Patriot Act is as strong now as it has ever been. We have made some progress since October 2001. The public understands the issues better, and I think many of my colleagues do too. Support for changes to the Patriot Act has grown over the years to the point where we actually had no objection in the Senate last year to passing a pretty good bill. This was back in July of 2005, a bill that made significant improvements to the Patriot Act. And then, near the end of the year, 46 senators actually voted to reject a conference report that took several steps backwards from that bill. Even just a few days ago, I was heartened when the senator from Pennsylvania, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, the foremost proponent of the conference report, actually announced that he would essentially take the four amendments that I had hoped to offer, the amendments that I was denied the right to offer here in the Senate, and combine them into a bill that he will now seek to move through the Judiciary Committee and enact into law. His bill will have several co-sponsors, including me. So even some of the senators who fought for this reauthorization bill, of course, realize that it falls short and will join the fight to try to fix the Patriot Act. Now that's somewhat encouraging, and I thank them for their honesty. I thank them for recognizing that the rights and freedoms of the American people are worth fighting for here in the Senate, just as we ask so many of our young people to fight for them overseas. Mr. President, the rules of the Senate provide that debate on this measure is now limited after the vote on cloture that we just took. But debate is not yet closed, and I believe there is still more that needs to be said. In particular, I want, in the time I have left, to give voice to the millions of Americans who have expressed concern about the Patriot Act and have asked repeatedly for it to be changed. There has been an extraordinary outpouring of public sentiment against this law, and that sentiment deserves to be heard on the floor of the Senate. So in a few minutes, I'm going to read some of the resolutions that have been passed and editorials that have been written and letters that have been sent in these final hours before the Patriot Act is reauthorized. I want my colleagues to hear the voices of the citizens of this country. These voices cannot be stifled by votes taken here. They may have been ultimately defeated by procedural maneuvers in this body over the past few weeks, but their concerns for the liberties and freedoms are real, and they're not going away. We ignore them at our peril. Mr. President, before I turn to those voices, I want to start with the basic principles. Our nation's strength comes not only from our mighty economy and our unmatched military might, but from our constitutional system and our reverence for the rule of law. That is what has kept us free for over 2 1/4 centuries in our history as a nation. Millions of patriotic Americans love this country and support our military men and women in their difficult missions abroad, but worry about the fate of our Constitution here at home. Our constitutional freedoms, our American values, are what make our country worth fighting for as we strive to defeat the terrorists who threaten us. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights are documents that we often talk about and less often actually pick up and reread. In light of their central importance to the debate about the Patriot Act, I thought it would be worth reading them today. United States Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Article 1, Section 1. All legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Section 2, Clause 1. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by the people of the several states, and the electors in each state shall have the qualifications requisite for electors of the most numerous branch of the state legislature. Clause 2. No person shall be a representative who shall not have attained the age of 25 years and been 7 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state in which he shall be chosen. Clause 3. Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years. And of course, this provision has been amended by the 14th Amendment, so I will skip that part. The actual enumeration shall be made within 3 years after the first meeting of the Congress of the United States, and within every subsequent term of 10 years in such manner as they shall by law direct. The number of representatives shall not exceed one for every 30,000, but each state shall have at least one representative, and until such enumeration shall be made, the state of New Hampshire shall be entitled to choose 3, Massachusetts 8, Rhode Island and Providence Plantations 1, Connecticut 5, New York 6, New Jersey 4, Pennsylvania 8, Delaware 1, Maryland 6, Virginia 10, North Carolina 5, South Carolina 5, and Georgia 3. Clause 4. When vacancies happen in the representation from any state, the executive authority thereof shall issue writs of election to fill such vacancies. Clause 5. The House of Representatives shall choose their speaker and other offices and shall have the sole power of impeachment. Section 3. Clause 1. The Senate of the United States shall be composed of 2 senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have 1 vote. This, of course, has been altered by subsequent amendment. Clause 2, immediately after they shall be assembled in consequence of the first election, they shall be divided as equally as they may be into 3 classes. The seats of the senators of the first class shall be vacated at the expiration of the second year, of the second class at the expiration of the 4th year, and of the 3rd class at the expiration of the 6th year, so that 1/3 may be chosen every second year. And if vacancies happen by resignation or otherwise during the recess of the legislature of any state, the executive thereof may make temporary appointments until the next meeting of the legislature, which shall then fill such vacancies. And again, this portion has been altered by subsequent constitutional amendment. Clause 3, no person shall be a senator who shall not have attained the age of 30 years and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. Clause 4, the Vice President of the United States shall be the President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. Clause 5, the Senate shall choose their other officers and also a President pro tempore in the absence of the Vice President or when he shall exercise the office of President of the United States. Clause 6, the Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of 2/3 of the members present. Clause 7. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. Section 4, Clause 1. The time, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof, but the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations except as to the places of choosing senators. Clause 2. The Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall be on the first Monday in December unless they shall by law appoint a different day. Section 5, Clause 1. Each House shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business. But a smaller number may adjourn from day to day, and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each House may provide. Clause 2. Each House may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and with the concurrence of 2/3, expel a member. Clause 3. Each House shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same, excepting such parts as may in their judgment require secrecy. And the yeas and nays of the members of either House on any question shall, at the desire of 1/5 of those present, be entered on the journal. Clause 4. Neither House during the session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that in which the two Houses shall be sitting. Section 6. Clause 1. The Senators and Representatives shall receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective Houses and in going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either House, they shall not be questioned in any other place. Clause 2. No Senator or Representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time, and no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either House during his continuance in office. Section 7, Clause 1. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives, but the Senate may propose or concur with amendments as on other bills. Clause 2. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become a law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he approve it, he shall sign it. But if not, he shall return it with his objections to that House in which it shall have originated, who shall enter the objections at large on their journal and proceed to reconsider it. If, after such reconsideration, 2/3 of that House shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent, together with the objections, to the other House, by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if approved by 2/3 of that House, it shall become a law. But in all such cases, the votes of both Houses shall be determined by yeas and nays, and the names of the person voting for and against the bill shall be entered on the journal of each House respectively. If any bill shall not be returned by the President within 10 days, Sundays excepted, after it shall have been presented to him, the same shall be a law, in like manner as if he had signed it, unless the Congress, by their adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall not be a law. Clause 3. Every order, resolution, or vote to which the concurrence of the Senate and House of Representatives may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment, shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him, or being disapproved by him, shall be repassed by 2/3 of the Senate and House of Representatives according to the rules and limitations prescribed in the case of a bill. Section 8. Clause 1. The Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Clause 2. To borrow money on the credit of the United States. Clause 3. To regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with the Indian tribes. Clause 4. To establish a uniform rule of naturalization and uniform laws on the subject of bankruptcies throughout the United States. Clause 5. To coin money, regulate the value thereof and of foreign coin, and fix the standards of weights and measures. Clause 6. To provide for the punishment of counterfeiting the securities and current coin of the United States. Clause 7. To establish post offices and post roads. Clause 8. To promote the progress of science and useful arts by securing for limited times to authors and inventors the exclusive right to their respective writings and discoveries. Clause 9. To constitute tribunals inferior to the Supreme Court. Clause 10. To define and punish piracies and felonies committed in the high seas and offenses against the law of nations. Clause 11. To declare war, grant letters of marque and reprisal, and make rules concerning captures on land and water. Clause 12. To raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. Clause 13, to provide and maintain a navy. Clause 14, to make rules for the government and regulation of the land and naval forces. Clause 15, to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions. Clause 16, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia, and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointment of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. Clause 17, to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square as may by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise like authority over all places purchased by the consent of the legislature of the state in which the same shall be, for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. And clause 18, to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by this Constitution in the government of the United States or in any department or officer thereof. Section 9, clause 1. The migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808, but a tax or duty may be imposed on such importation not exceeding $10 for each person. The privilege of the writ of, clause 2, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. Clause 3, no bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. Clause 4, no capitation or other direct tax shall be laid unless in proportion to the census or enumeration herein before directed to be taken. Clause 5, no tax or duty shall be laid on the articles exported from any state. Clause 6, no preference shall be given by any regulation of commerce or revenue to the ports of one state over those of another, nor shall vessels bound to or from one state be obliged to enter, clear, or pay duties in another. Clause 7, no money shall be drawn from the Treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law, and a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Clause 8, no title of nobility shall be granted by the United States, and no person holding any office of profit or trust under them shall, without the consent of Congress, accept of any present emolument, office, or title of any kind whatever from any king, prince, or foreign state. Section 10, Clause 1. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Clause 2. No state shall, without the consent of the Congress, lay any imposts or duties on imports and exports except what may be absolutely necessary for executing its inspection laws. And the net produce of all duties and imposts laid by any state on imports or exports shall be for the use of the Treasury of the United States, and all such laws shall be subject to the revision and control of the Congress. Clause 3. No state shall, without the consent of Congress, lay any duty of tonnage, keep troops or ships of war in time of peace, enter in any agreement or compact with another state or the foreign power, or engage in war unless actually invaded or in such imminent danger as will not admit of delay. Article 2, Section 1, Clause 1. The executive power shall be vested in the President of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the Vice President chosen for the same term be elected as follows. Clause 2. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. But no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Clause 3. The electors shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for two persons, of whom one at least shall not be an inhabitant of the state of the same state with themselves. And they shall make a list of all the persons voted for and of the number of votes for each, which list they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of the government of the United States, directed to the President of the Senate. The President of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes shall be the President, if such number be a majority of the whole number of electeds appointed. And if there be more than one who have such a majority and have an equal number of votes, then the House of Representatives shall immediately choose by ballot one of them for President. And if no person have a majority, then from the five highest on the list, the said House shall in like manner choose the President. But in choosing the President, The vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from two-thirds of the states, and a majority of the all of the states shall be necessary to a choice. In every case, after the choice of the president, the person having the greatest number of votes of the electors shall be the vice president. But if there should remain two or more who have equal votes, the Senate shall choose from them by ballot the vice president. Clause 4. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. Clause 5. No person except a natural-born citizen or a citizen of the United States at the time of the adoption of this Constitution shall be eligible to the office of president. Neither shall any person be eligible to that office who shall not have attained the age of 35 years and been 14 years a resident within the United States. Clause 6. In case of the removal of the president from office or of his death, resignation, or inability to discharge the powers and duties of the said office, the same shall devolve on the vice president. The Congress may by law provide for the case of removal, death, resignation, or inability both of the president and the vice president, declaring what officer shall then act as president, and such officer shall act accordingly until the disability be removed or a president shall be elected. Clause 7. The president shall at stated times receive for his services a compensation, which shall neither be increased nor diminished during the period for which he shall have been elected, and he shall not receive within that period any other emolument from the United States or any of them. Clause 8. Before he enter on the execution of his office, he shall take the following oath or affirmation. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Section 2, Clause 1. The President shall be a Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer in each of the executive departments upon any subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. And he shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Clause 2, he shall have the power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided two-thirds of the senators concur, two-thirds of the senators present concur. And he shall nominate and by and with the advice of the and consent of the Senate, shall appoint ambassadors and other public ministers and consuls, judges of the Supreme Court, and all other officers of the United States whose appointments are not herein otherwise provided for, and which shall be established by law. But the Congress may by law vest the appointment of such inferior officers as they may think proper in the President alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. Clause 3. The President shall have the power to fill up all vacancies that may happen during the recess of the Senate by granting commissions which shall expire at the end of their next session. Section 3. He shall from time to time give to the Congress information of the State of the Union, and recommend to their consideration such measures as he shall judge necessary and expedient. He may, on extraordinary occasions, convene both houses or either of them, and in case of disagreement between them with respect to the time of adjournment, he may adjourn them to such time as he shall think proper. He shall receive ambassadors and other public ministers. He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed and shall commission all the officers of the United States. Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Article 3. Section 1. The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court, and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the Supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Section 2, Clause 1. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under the Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign state citizens or subjects. Clause 2, In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and consuls, and those in which a state shall be a party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all the other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions under such regulations as the Congress shall make. Clause 3. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, shall be by jury, and such trial shall be held in the state where said crime shall have been committed. But when not committed within any state, the trial shall be at such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. Section 3, Clause 1. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. Clause 2. The Congress shall have the power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeiture except during the life of the person attainted. Article 4, Section 1. Full faith and credit shall be given in each state to the public acts, records, and judicial proceedings of every other state, and the Congress may, by general laws, prescribe the manner in which such acts, records, and proceedings shall be proved and the effect thereof. Section 2, Clause 1. The citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities of citizens in the several states. Clause 2. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or other crime who shall flee from justice and be found in another state shall, on demand of the executive authority of the state from which he fled, be delivered up to be removed to the state having jurisdiction of the crime. Clause 3. No person held to service or labor in one state under the laws thereof escaping in another shall, in consequence of any law or regulation therein, be discharged from service or such service or labor, but shall be delivered up to the claim of the party to whom such service or labor may be due. Section 3. Clause 1. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the junction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned as well as of the Congress. Clause 2. Congress shall have the power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or of any particular state. Section 4. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this Union a republican form of government, and shall protect each of them against invasion and an application of the legislature or the executive when the legislature cannot be convened against domestic violence. Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to the Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress, provided that no amendment which shall be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of this first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Article 6. Clause 1. All debts, contracted, and engagements entered into before the adoption of this Constitution shall be as valid against the United States under this Constitution as under the Confederation. Clause 2. This Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Clause 3. The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. But no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any office or public trust under the United States. Article 7. Ratification of the conventions of nine states shall be sufficient for the establishment of this Constitution between the states so ratifying the same, done in convention by the unanimous consent of the states present the 17th day of September in the year of our Lord 1787 and of the independence of the United States of America the 12th. The Bill of Rights. Amendments 1 through 10 of the Constitution. The conventions of a number of the states having at the time of adopting the Constitution expressed a desire, in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers, that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. Resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America and Congress assembled, two-thirds of both houses concurring, that the following articles be proposed to the legislatures of the several states as amendments to the Constitution of the United States, all or any of which articles, when ratified by three-fourths of the said legislatures, to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution, namely, Amendment 1, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Article 2, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Amendment 3, no soldier shall in times of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Mr. President, I'm going to read that one again. It's the Fourth Amendment. More than any other provision that I'm reading here, this is the one that is at the heart of the debate about this USA Patriot Act and its revisions. It is this provision that is particularly violated by the past imminent reauthorization of this law. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor.